What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Laying the Points with Farley Betts. This is the Stone Cold Steve Austin, a sports betting podcast, because we talk about things in this industry that others will not tell it like it is. Today's another example of that. On this podcast, I'm going to look at sports betting in all factors, in all ways, intangibles, tangibles, data, trends. But most importantly, for somebody who studies human psychology and human behavior, something that's not really talked about much in sports betting, the tendencies that you can pick up on, that's my forte, and it's treated us really well. My name is Chris R. Farley. For those of you who don't know, you can follow me at Farley Betts across Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok. I'm a betting analyst on the BetUS NBA and NFL shows, the owner of FarleyBets.com, and we got free picks coming up there every single day. A lot of wins already. Fresh out the gate, check us out at FarleyBets.com. Sign up for the free newsletter. Free picks every single day. And obviously, the host of Laying the Points with Farley Betts. Also, head of betting at the 33rd team. Probably one of the more prominent things I've done. I love what I do over there at the 33rd team with that great company. Talking every week to former NFL pro safety Tank Williams about our betting angles on every game in the NFL. Of course, Super Bowl coming up, so we've got some videos for you on that. Going to have some other videos up for you, as well as my evaluation of the Super Bowl lines and my best bets coming up this week at the 33rd team. But it's Monday, it's February 6th, and there's plenty to talk about in the wide world of sports betting. Always grateful to be back here with all of you. And I got a few things to talk about before we get into some free picks and angles that we're looking at in the NBA and one in the NFL upcoming for Super Bowl 57. We'll get to that later in the show. First, let me talk about a few sports betting topics to start the show. One is a tweet that I sent out Friday night, which I was surprised that I got some negative feedback about this tweet. Got an email from one of my premium customers, which I didn't appreciate. A few others on Twitter. So this is what my tweet says. You tell me. My tweet said, 8:30 at night on a Friday, because I could see the way the night was going in the NBA. So pretty sure I'll lose all my NBA bets tonight. Why? Because success in betting is mostly about you, your mental health, your preparation. Not variance, not injuries, not the teams. You, which is something I really believe. And then I said, I woke up burnt out. I hated the slate, still forced out picks. Pro tip, don't do that. So why did I put out that tweet, first of all? And if you read that tweet from start to finish, man, I don't think that's that bad of a thing to say. Honesty, transparency, that's my brand, right? Like when Apple came out and when they put that U2 album on everybody's phones, afterwards they were like, my bad, that was dumb. You guys probably didn't want U2 and their newest album on your phones. Whoops. We won't do that again. I really thought that was commendable that Apple did that, right? Because in a world, in an age where politicians can rarely admit when they do or say anything wrong, right? There's always an excuse. There's always like a way to talk around things that they've done wrong, or maybe decisions, policy decisions that they've made that were detrimental to the country. There's never any like, oh yeah, we shouldn't have done that. No, they'll defend it. They'll talk about data that kind of surrounds it that might seem positive to try to put a spin on it. They don't face it. Most companies, same way, right? Instead of looking at their brand, they might be like, oh, we're not gonna even bring that up, that thing that happened, that customer service lapse. We're not gonna even bring that up because maybe people won't notice, right? The reason why I put out that tweet was a few reasons. First of all, every single person that calls themselves a pro bettor or handicapper has done exactly what I did on Friday night. They're just not admitting it. Like, that tweet doesn't help my brand necessarily, right? It's like, I'm admitting that I forced out picks, that I hated the slate, that I felt burnt out, which I felt burnt out a lot the past few months. I took on a lot this season in the betting world. I don't regret it. I learned a lot. I'll know how to handle my life better next football season, right? I'll know how to organize things better. I'll think twice before I take on, you know, eight different things in 1 year. But I was burnt out. I was being honest about that. And that's something every pro handicapper does. That's something that you as a bettor have done for sure, right? You've woken up on a Saturday or a Friday. There's not much going on. You look at the NBA slate, for example, or you look at the baseball or hockey slate. You say to yourself, I don't really like this slate very much. I don't see any value here. I might lose today. Like, if I choose to bet, I might lose because I'm not seeing the value here in these games. But what do? You make a bet anyway, right? You make a bet anyway. Maybe you make a few bets. And a lot of that is based on the fact that you want to bet. You want to have action, right? Every single handicapper, every single bettor, the reason why we enjoy this is because it's a thrill. It's stimulation, right? There's some kind of incentive in our brains. We're wired to be like, I can put this money down and I can make this money. Let's fucking go, right? It feels like a quick way to make money. Very addictive behavior is gambling and sports betting. It can be very addictive. And that's something, you know, I've had my wife on the show before. I'll have her back again to give some of her thoughts on what happens to our brains psychologically when we gamble, when we're a part of the handicapping world. But it easily hooks us, and it easily makes us impulsive, right? The most impulsive people are often involved in betting because it's that impulse, that desire, that trigger to want something immediately, to want to gamble on something and to get an instant prize. Right, that's what gambling is, right? There's a lot of people who never gamble because they don't want to do that with their money. They're more, you know, they're people who like to step back, take things slow. Most gamblers, nah. High pace, high octane, need a lot of stimulation, right? So this is something that everybody has done, first of all. Second of all, I wanted to put that out there so that we could all learn from it together, right? Like, don't make the same mistake as me. Don't force out a pick. Don't force out bets. You don't need a bet every day. You don't need to wait. You don't need to try to win money every single day. There's tomorrow's slate, you know. And sure enough, the Saturday slate, I love the Saturday slate. And we had a winning day. We had a winning day on Saturday. Go figure. Should have just avoided the Friday slate. But just because I'm a premium, just because I offer premium picks, I'm a pro handicapper, does not mean that I'm infallible. And imagine if our ethic, like, this is the bigger reason why I put out that tweet. Our ethics in the sports betting world have to change. Because not only is there the gambling police, like gambling 101 guys and girls on Twitter who are just ready to fucking beat down anybody who says anything outside the realm of what they think is proper sports betting tactics. Not only do those people exist, but there's this overriding, overwhelming, or I should say underlying perspective and perception that I think we all have, that sports bettors that call themselves pro handicappers never make those mistakes, right? That they're always in control. They're always doing things the right way. Like, they're going line item by line item for hours every single day and being like, you know what? No, I'm not going to bet that. Like, that's not how humans work. Now, if you're a pro handicapper and you're doing this every single day and that's all you're doing, you're making a ton of money, you're in the top 0.00001% of what pro handicappers or handicappers or bettors are, right? And maybe you have a system that is very judicious, very careful, and it works for you, but you are very rare. We're talking to the betting public here. We're talking to the vast majority, the 99.9% who gamble, who bet, right? And we cannot promote the ethic in sports betting that we don't make mistakes. We also can't promote the ethic in sports betting that losses are not our fault. Losses are our fault. We're choosing to gamble on a game There are general unknowns in every single game. You do your handicap the best you can, and you put out the bet. But you didn't have to put out that bet. It's only you know how much you knew about that game, how confident you were about that game. And I guarantee you, every handicapper alive who calls himself a handicapper, who gives out picks, absolutely had a 1 out of 5-star confidence one day and still put out the pick because they wanted content, they wanted to put it out there. It ain't right. It's not what we should do, but we've all done it. And the ethic should not be handicappers never make mistakes. Like, I'm going to sign up for this girl or guy to get their picks because they never make mistakes. That's insane. Right? Like, there's a difference between a plumber that comes to your house and fixes something. That's a black and white operation. This needs to be fixed. This is how to fix it. Like, they do the same thing, right? Like, obviously a plumber, God bless them, they have 1,000 different things they can do to your house, but everything that they do has an answer. So you expect them to hit at 100%, right? If they fixed a few toilets, hopefully when they come over to your house, that's 100% hit rate. They're going to fix your toilet, right? But that's not sports betting. We don't live in absolutes. We don't live in black and whites. We live in theoreticals. We live in probabilities, right? I don't see anybody writing an email, or maybe these crazy SOBs who write me emails or who DM me and obviously have no life. Like, if you're doing that, and this one dude did that to me at 10:30 on Friday night. If you're writing me an email at 10:30 on Friday night because you're pissed off, you have no life. You need to work on yourself. If that's all you can do is send a derogatory, angry message to me. So message is being delivered from me to you that's what needs to happen, first of all. Okay, but second of all, I don't think people are sending angry emails or text messages or phone calls to the weathermen or weather women, the meteorologists who are giving you the weather. You said there was a 70% chance that it would rain and it did not rain. What the fuck? And weather is more of a science than sports betting, for sure, right? Like, we have a million different instruments. We can measure things now. We have radar. We can anticipate tornadoes. I mean, you name it, right? It's a science in a lot of ways. And they still get it wrong. Sports betting. We're talking about, in football, 22 human beings on the field who are very flawed. In basketball, 10 human beings on the court, very flawed. Coaches, very flawed. Situations and environments, very volatile. It ain't the same. It ain't science. It's probability, it's possibility, it's theory. So this is something that happens across the sports betting industry all the time. And for you old, crusty, angry, probably baby boomer, pro handicappers out there who wouldn't like a tweet like this, let me ask you something. Because this is what I can't stand about a lot of it's mostly men in that generation who love to proselytize and pontificate about what they think you should do or the ways you should think about sports betting. They have no fucking clue what it's like to be a sports bettor today. These guys were the cool guys, right? You go to a bar, this guy has some kind of Hawaiian shirt on, probably drinking whiskey. Maybe you got a steak next to him, maybe a big glass of wine. Like, back in the day, 80s, 90s, 70s, these guys were walking up and down the streets of Vegas, placing their bets. That's a different world, man. That's not today's world. You lived in an unsaturated, rare, like, oh shit, that guy's a wise guy. Oh, that guy's a sports bettor. Like, oh wow, he makes money gambling. Right? It was taboo. Very few people did it. Very, very few people did it. Very niche. Now it's very saturated, right? Now everybody and their brother and their sister and their cousin and their wife and husband and neighbor are in the sports betting industry being like, I know how to bet. I know how to give out picks. And Lord knows they're showing off their bodies. They got bright, beautiful smiles, big personalities. And then they give out their pick. And a lot of the reasons why people follow them are because of that other shit beforehand that I just mentioned, not the actual pick. But this is the world we live in. And we live in a world with massive egos and influencers who can never admit that they're doing anything wrong, can never admit that they were impulsive, can never admit that they bet on a slate that they shouldn't have. This is about me being transparent, open, honest. And let me ask you this question. Who would you rather trust? Would you rather trust a sports bettor who's honest with you and admits that he's made a mistake? Or would you rather follow a sports bettor who never admits that? Oh, it's variance. Oh, this team, this shit never happened before. I can't believe this. This team just gave up. I look at what I did wrong. I look at what I forced out or shouldn't have bet on. That's what I look at. In the beginning of this NBA season, for a solid 3 months, I felt so great about so many of my picks, and I probably hit at like 48%. I mean, I had the worst starts of my NBA season that I've had 2 years on the scene of public sports handicapping and sports betting, being, you know, somebody who says I give out picks, I'm an authority. Like, I've been at this now for a pretty long time. I mean, I've been doing this much longer than 2 years, but I've been on the public scene, social media, for 2 years. And this is easily the hardest start to an NBA season I've ever had. But I wasn't blaming variance. I mean, I was pissed. I was saying, what is going on? But you got to look at yourself, right? Like, you got to look at what you're doing wrong. That's what that tweet's about. Expect more transparency, honesty, candid approaches to sports betting from me, because that's what I'll always do. I keep it real with you. Always. Let's talk about a way to win an NBA total betting very often. This is a method that I use a lot, and it's working very often right now for me, especially at the end of NBA games, and I want to share it with all of you. I call it the 30-30 rule. Okay? This is simply what it means. A basketball team that is really good on offense, they run at a high pace, so they're a high-scoring team. A high-scoring basketball team is going to average around 30 points per quarter. If two high-scoring teams face each other, they usually average around 60 points combined per quarter, 30 and 30, right? In these NBA games, if you think two teams can fly at a fast pace and they're high-scoring, like let's say we get the Warriors and the Kings, right? Or you get the Hornets and the Pacers. Something like that, right? Or you get the Lakers and the Bucks, who lately the Bucks, woo, super fast pace at home. I mean, this is the time to bet on the Bucks, ladies and gentlemen. They are in smash mode, and I love it. Proving that they're still one of the best teams in the NBA. But anyway, when you got two teams who go at a fast pace, high scoring, they're going to average around 30 points per quarter, that team. And what you see happening at a lot of these end-of-game situations is two teams will be scoring, you know, 60 points combined in one quarter, 63 combined points in another quarter, 62 in another quarter. So we'll get to the fourth quarter, and it'll be like 98 to 93. One team's in the lead, right? And at the beginning of the fourth quarter, especially if it's a close game, it'll slow down a little bit because these teams are competing, right? Now, finally, all right, fourth quarter, let's play a little bit of defense. But what's happening, and what we're seeing very often, is these NBA teams, the books do the same thing, by the way, right? So books usually, especially if it's supposed to be a high-scoring game, when there's about 6 minutes left in the game, they'll anticipate that there's going to be 30 more points or so scored between two high-scoring teams. You'll see that, right? Two teams scoring 30 points per quarter, 60 points. So halfway through the quarter at the six-minute spot, you're looking for 30 more points to be scored. Sometimes, if the fourth quarter especially is slowing down, you'll see a low total. Like, let's say the score's 108 to 103, so to 211 points, and there's 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. You might see that total for the full game ending at 211 is where it is now at 6 minutes, right? You might see that around, let's say, 238 and a half, 239 and a half. And what happens in a lot of these games is, especially in the final 3 minutes, like I've been waiting until there's about 3.5 to 4 minutes left. So there should be at least 15 points between both teams scored in the final 3 minutes, right? 15 points every 3 minutes, 30 points every 6 minutes, 60 points every quarter. That's a 30-30 rule, okay? Between two high-scoring teams only, all right? But even if they're not particularly potent offenses or high-scoring teams, a lot of times you'll see in that final 3 to 4 minutes, the books have it around that 15-point, right? The 15-point total is left in the game, and these two teams will score much more than that. Because in the final 3 minutes, for whatever reason, maybe because it's not the playoffs yet, you don't see as much defense. You see concentrated energy and effort on the offensive side of the court, and those live totals have been hitting for me very often, very often. So just keep that in mind as you watch these totals, live totals in the NBA. There's a lot of money to be won. And if you're anticipating a high-scoring game, then you might want to start anticipating over 30 points halfway through the quarter, over 15 points with 3 minutes left in the quarter, and over 60 points in the full quarter. Now, same goes in the other direction, right? If there's reason why the game should slow down, why there could be more defense, or maybe these two teams facing aren't particularly potent on offense, or maybe they're tired, right? Maybe they just got off a back-to-back or overtime. Maybe you want to anticipate less than 60, right? Maybe it's around 55, 52, 53. Just have an idea that the 30-30 rule, or I guess you could call it 15-15, 60-60, whatever you want to call it. I call it 30-30 because per quarter, two great offensive teams will score around 30 points. That should be your metric. And then weigh and measure everything around that 30-30. Slower, not as talented, maybe it's lower scoring. Faster, more talented, more reason to score, maybe it's higher scoring. And try to get it in the final 3 minutes or so. Again, books, like if it's 218, I mean, I'm making up numbers here, but let's say it's, 118 to 111 left in the fourth quarter, right? So that's 229 points. The books might have the final total being 244. Lately, you hit the over on that, that's hitting. And it ain't a blind bet. Don't blindly bet it. It's not something that always works, obviously, but something to watch because a lot of these end of game scenarios, we're seeing a surge of points. If you look at that Toronto game on Saturday, that's exactly what happened. There was like, it was 103 to 93. So 196 points left with 3 minutes left in that game. They ended up scoring over 230 points in the final. So in the final 3 minutes, they scored 25 to 30 points. Doesn't happen all the time, but that 30-30 rule can really help you. All right. Now time to give out some free picks in the NBA. Man, we were on some heater hitting about 67, 68% for 2 weeks. Let's cool down a little bit. Went 3-3 last night, 4-3 the night before. Slight plus units both nights, but it's cooled down. But we're ready. We're ready to get back on the train, back on the heater. So let's make it happen starting today, Monday, February 6th. Here are a few free picks I like. First of all, Thunder visiting the Golden State Warriors. Golden State, as we know, is now without Steph Curry. There's nothing more jarring to a team than when you lose your star. When you lose Steph Curry, you lose more than a star, right? More than a scorer, more than a facilitator, more than what he brings physically on the court and production-wise in the court, you lose a leader. And I think Golden State will respond and adapt with better defense. And the OKC Thunder just scored over 150 points against the Rockets a few nights ago. That was a revenge game for them. Great spot for them. We saw that coming. We bet all over the Thunder, won every one of our bets in that game, including minus 10, an inflated line on the Thunder. But we figured it would hit because of that revenge spot, bad spot for Houston. But this is a much more difficult spot for the Thunder. And last time these two teams faced, which was only a few games ago, about a week ago, Gilgeous-Alexander, SGA, dropped 31 points on the Warriors. He's been killing it, averaging 34 points per game in his last seven games, often leading his team in rebounds and assists as well. That dude deserves all the accolades, all the praise that he's getting. He's a star. And obviously they need more on that Thunder roster, but he's a star. But you don't think Golden State knows that? You don't think Golden State is going to prep better for SGA? His line, his points are so inflated today. It's at 32.5 on DraftKings, and it's juiced to the over. I think that's a trap. Golden State prepares really well situationally, strategically. They haven't been a good mid-range defense, and that's where SGA makes his money, in the paint, in the mid-range. Draymond Green becomes the Warriors' leader when there's no Steph Curry. And Draymond Green, I think, is going to lead with aggression. We're going to see some improvements from them on defense. I mean, they've been a top 11 defense the past month, pretty good on defense, but I expect them to be even better at home. That's what we've seen in previous iterations of the Warriors earlier this season. So I like SGA to go under his points prop, under 32.5, and I also like the total to go under. We've seen that drop a little bit, was 237.5. I would still take it under 236. I think the Warriors' defense comes out strong. I also think Jordan Poole's points total is a little too low, 22.5. He usually has the biggest uptick in production in minutes when there's no Steph Curry. So a few bets to look at there. Check it out. Warriors and Thunder. Should be a pretty good matchup. Thunder are an interesting team, a growing team. And that Thunder roster has become much better on defense. One of the better three-point defenses in the NBA. That's a good thing for the under tonight, too, especially when you're facing the Warriors. Should be a better game than probably we would have thought, you know, previously, especially without Curry. Warriors are short favorites, but I expect them to win. Expect them to apply that defense and enjoy that free pick. Hopefully that hits. More details on that free pick also at FarleyBets.com. And thank you all of you for listening to Laying the Points with Farley Betts. We'll be back again this week, at least 2 to 3 podcasts per week. You can expect at least one more on Wednesday or Thursday, probably Wednesday this week as we get into our post-NFL season routine, talking more NBA. It was a pleasure sharing some theory about the NBA with all of you today and how I attacked those live totals. It was also a pleasure going over that tweet and some of the crazy crap that happens. The crazy shit, let's just say, that happens on gambling Twitter. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, Farley Betts, we outta here.